Well, good evening. Thank you for tuning in. It's a pleasure to be here with you. We've got a little community here tonight. And we're blessed. We've got a full house here tonight. We've got my good friend Vinny Mikorski, who called me tonight, and something really fortuitous happened. Vinny's going to see the movie. And what was the movie, Vinny?
The Sinosopher.
The Sinosopher. And so Vinny calls me, and he says, hey, you gotta come see the Sinosopher. You know what was funny?
You didn't even I didn't think about it.
No, I said, I'm coming. Okay, man, I'm coming.
It's like, that was the beauty of it.
Don't ask me twice. I'm going to come. And we have three kids, two still at home, and so it's not always a simple thing to be spontaneous.
Yes.
Tonight, it seemed there was good reason.
Not too hard on a Tuesday night, though, huh?
Well, it's a blessing whenever it comes, but happening on a Tuesday night is good, too. So I want to say many thanks. I always enjoy when we get together, when we hang out. It's always a lot
Definitely.
Of fun.
Definitely.
Vinny works at EMQ, does community mental health, but you've done so many things. You've done hospice. You're also a poet. And you're working on the music, too. And that's really a lot of fun. And then sometimes I get to do it with you as well.
A husband and a dad.
Yes, and it's two of the biggest things.
Yes. Right there.
Well, because of your thoughtfulness, we have good fortune tonight. We got to see that movie. And we after the movie, we got a chance to talk to the filmmakers and to the gentleman who's the primary subject of the film, whose experience speaks through the film. Actually, many things speak through the film. But we have the good fortune to have these guys here with us tonight. And what we have, the film again, is The Sinosopher.
Sinosopher.
which is a pretty cool title. And that kind of comes directly from Alex. Alex, is it Alex Caldero? Did I get that right? Is it close?
Yeah, he got it. Yeah, like a native.
Well, I just want to say thank you for your film and for your work in your film, for your work. And I want to say thank you for the film to Travis Lowe and Torben Bernhard. You guys are here tonight with us, too.
Thank you.
We're really lucky. I mean, I couldn't imagine a more interesting way to be able to spend this hour. So I feel really fortunate. Thank you guys so much.
Well,
so you guys had a showing tonight at the Cinequest Film Festival, right?
Yes, we did. It was Camera 3 in downtown San Jose.
And that's something that's still going on, if I'm understanding. Is it more days?
Yeah, till the 7th, I believe.
Oh. And so are you guys going to be around during that time frame?
We'll be here till Friday, and we have another screening on Thursday at 2 o'clock.
Nice.
At Camera 12, downtown San Jose.
And you guys all going to be there?
I won't be there.
You won't be there.
But the filmmakers.
The filmmakers will be there. Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that I think will be interesting, it struck me when I watched the movie, that the movie presented a whole bunch of really interesting experiences. And part of the experience that was reflected in the movie that got my attention was the experience of a couple of acquaintances, friends of Alex's, who have their own take on Alex's presence, Alex's life. You know, what's Alex doing in Orem, Utah? And what's Alex doing with his art and with how he plays, you know? So that was really cool, and I'd love to kind of get your feeling on that. But I want to acknowledge you guys right now and say your whole project is this resonance, is this playfulness with what Alex is doing here. So he got you guys engaged, and so then you came through with the creative act of this movie, which is a pretty interesting synthesis, it seems. So you guys have your own reaction, your own experience when...
Oh, absolutely.
You guys were students of Alex, is that right?
That's right. Yeah, Utah Valley University in Orem, Utah.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that. What was that like? What happened?
We were both students. The first class I took, I just so happened to be in a class with Torben, was on Beat Generation Arts and Culture. And Alex mixed in a lot of, you know, the beat poets, the beat painters, the beat filmmakers, and then he would sprinkle in his performance as well. And I knew Alex before the class, and I'd seen him do his performances, do his readings and so forth, and I was just fascinated by him. And so about 2 years later, Torben and I had another class with him, and we went to one of his performances, and Torben just approached me afterwards and said, you know, we really got to document this guy. And I was like, absolutely. And we hadn't ever, you know, Torben had worked on a few things before, and I'd never touched a camera really or editing or anything, and we picked it right up and filmed Alex for over 100 hours.
Wow.
And then cut the film down to, it's a 66-minute film.
So, 66 minutes.
Yeah. And, you know, we explore portions of his life, but we really focus on his brand of sound poetry and experimentation that obviously he calls sonosophy.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's funny because, you know, I think, Vinny, you told me it was a relatively short film. You told me, you know, we should be done with the film by like 8:30, but then we had some discussion afterwards. But it seemed like it had much more of a track to it than that. It didn't seem to last a long time, but it had so much in it. My attention was really engaged in what was going on, you know, with the interactions, you know, certainly with the poetry, with the expression, but with the relationships that were evident in the film. You guys must have had the sense of that as you were shooting it, or maybe when you were cutting it.
Yeah, I think so. And I think also that stems from our own personal relationship with Alex, aside from the film, that there was the resonance that we felt from Alex and then our desire to somehow continue that resonance in a different medium. And part of that, I think, is trying to approach it from a lot of different angles, and that trying to encompass all these different relationships that are part of that, maybe hold one part of this more complex and layered resonance.
That is really something that's striking in watching the film. It kind of comes across these different interactions and these different resonances. Well, there's music that you do, and there's sound that you do, Alex. You kind of, you know, share your expression, you know. And when it comes across, I really get the sense that for those people who are available to it, you know, it's fun. It's a gift to them, right? So, you know, I'm sure it kind of comes out of you in that way too, as a blessing.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you use that word gift, because I was just sitting here thinking, and I've thought this before, that I've been given a gift.
Yeah.
You know, by these two guys here. You know, Torben and Travis have given me a gift.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of this thing is really a thankless task that one does. One doesn't even know what the left hand is doing, the right hand is doing, you know. And so that's the way I've been trying to receive it, you know, as a pure gift. It's a gift from them. It's a gift from the school.
Oh, okay.
Because they funded it.
Same school where you teach?
Yeah, UVU. Okay. Or as I affectionately call it, UVU. You know, I tell students, I go, don't say UVU. Yeah, no, it's UVU. It's a word. It's a living entity. Yes, in other words, you know, you know, and so that's a gift from, and it's a, and then the third one, which is what you've been picking up on, is my colleagues,
yeah,
at school, you know, I mean, you know, that's another gift, you know. So I at times I have a lot of problems, you know. I don't know how to be so grateful, you know. You know what I mean? And I get really awkward and you know, it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
You know, how do you be so grateful to so many people that have seen something that I thought I was the only one that was seeing it? And that and all of a sudden these guys are saying, yeah, I heard that too.
Is that more sudden? You know? Is that more sudden and more recent that it's starting to really resonate so much with other people?
Well, I think that it's been happening all along, but I could only say that in retrospect.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
You know, the project has made me see the trajectory
okay
a little clearer.
Yeah.
You know, while before, I, you know, for the most part, you know, I've been basically raising a family. I got five children. You know, being a full-time father and a full-time, I'm a full-time everything. I don't do anything part-time. I'm a full-time father, I'm a full-time husband, I'm a full-time teacher, I'm a full-time, performer, I'm a full-time everything.
Yeah.
You know, and so I don't see anything. Like tonight I had one guy telling me, how come, you know, you haven't gotten some grants and more of this and more of that? Because what time is there? I'd rather devote the time to the realities,
yeah.
And that is my family, my work, you know, and my friends, and so that's where all the time goes. There's no time really for self promotion or things like that, you know. So even now, I'm talking right now, and this is a gift.
Yeah, I feel, you know, it's a gift to me and a gift to those who are here with us tonight.
Thank you.
You know, for which I thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Welcome. Well, and I got to thank Vinny again, because Vinny was the catalyst tonight. You set something in motion. So thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me just mention, you're listening to the Vibrational Voyage program on KKUP Cupertino 91.5 FM. So we have Vinny McCorsky, good friend of mine, also a poet. And we've got the good fortune to be hanging out tonight with Alex Caldero, who's the main focus of a wonderful movie called The Sinosopher. And we have the movie makers here. We've got Travis Lowe and Torben Bernhardt here when we're talking about the movie. So how many places has this movie aired, been viewed? Have you guys done any events like this up to this point?
This is actually the first film festival.
Yeah.
And before that, before this festival, we did have a couple fundraiser screenings in Utah.
Yeah.
So it's actually only been shown publicly three times.
Yeah.
Well,
fourth
screening.
My gosh! I mean, it's been born for less than a year, right? The film.
Yeah, we did our first fundraising screenings in September of last year.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we've submitted to a number of other festivals we're trying to get into, and we also have plans to travel around other universities, other schools, other of our own personal contacts that we know.
Yeah.
And do, you know, screenings that way as well.
Well, I bet you had quite a range of reactions. I mean, tonight, there were a lot of people who seemed pretty engaged. Everybody stayed for the whole Q&A, pretty much.
Yeah.
They asked some really pretty good questions. They seem to enjoy it. You know?
Absolutely. And the other night, too, the premiere of it was on Sunday night, and there was a lot of really good questions as well, really thoughtful questions.
Yeah. I noticed right at the end, you guys, the way that you cut the movie, there was some kind of a, I don't know how to say it, it had its own rhythm, the way that the scene was cut. I thought, well, that's really, it's a nice resonance with the way that some of the poetry, the expression comes across. So you guys kind of, at that moment, kind of put your own touch on what was being filmed.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the best parts in the film are when our voices as filmmakers kind of come into one accord with Alex's voice.
Hmm.
And I think we made earnest attempts to try to do that throughout the whole process, trying to discover ways to adequately depict what it's like to be at one of Alex's performances.
Okay.
And for us, that was trying to somehow communicate the visceral experience of being at a performance. And so the way that the lights act on your eyes and the way that you feel in your chest and trying to communicate that sense of immediacy that you feel at any of Alex's performances.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting because, we got a glimpse of some different audiences. And I think it was in New York, and there was this marvelous lady who was there, and she came up afterwards, and she had a raffle. And she seemed to love it, didn't understand it, but loved it. And she had the raffle. And, it was like, and now we have the raffle.
That's like a poetry meeting here, too. Same deal. Yes? there's art, but there's also business. Sell a CD, put out a chapbook.
It was just, it was fun to watch that, but it was interesting now that I reflect on what you're saying about, you know, this is the thing that escapes me. I'm not a filmmaker. So it's like, you know, you just take it for granted that those experiences are there, that those scenes are there.
You hope.
And yet then they are knitted together.
Yeah.
So that seems fascinating to me.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, one of the things we were discussing a little earlier, and we've discussed it before because it's a very important aspect to the way the result of the film is, that nothing was staged.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, nothing was staged.
Yeah.
So, for instance, we're finishing an interview.
Yeah.
In Florence, sitting by the cathedral there, the Santa Maria del Fiore, but with the Giotto Tower.
The
opening scene, right? Yeah. When all of a sudden the bell starts ringing.
Yes.
Well, what happens is I start chanting.
You're chanting or intoning with it.
It's just that's the way. Right. Or we're at this other church, San Matteo in Positano, you know, and all of a sudden this bell catches my eye and I pick it up and he's there with the camera. I mean, it's like nothing is staged. Nothing is pre.
So it was
let's do that. It was like this kind of
fluidity
throughout, and I think that the film, it's one of the waves that carries it, is that the fact that it was like that, you know, that it was because there was an inner thing that was driving it and was controlling it, as opposed to at any point saying, mm-hmm. why don't we do this? Why don't we try that? No, it wasn't anything like that. We were in Syracuse in the year of Dionysus. Well, I start to explain just like this, and he's there.
Yeah.
I didn't say, now listen, I'm going to be writing this. Why don't you come with the camera? I just started writing, and then there, these guys are there. And then I walk in, and we do the thing there. And it was one thing after another like that.
Well, it sounds like then what you were saying that you were trying to convey is Torben, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what it's like to be in the midst of this, because it's not just a performance, obviously. It's getting to me even deeper. I'm getting it.
Yeah,
it's about the whole gathering.
Yeah.
It's about everybody who's there and everybody who's participating in whatever way they're participating. And that's what it flows out of. Is that a semblance? Yeah.
It's a very synchronistic kind of one thing after another like that.
I think an interesting thing that allowed for that was early on, when we asked Alex if he wanted to do the project, he said the only way he could possibly conceive of doing the project is if we weren't outside documentarians. So anytime he's performing, he literally invited us into his performance space. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the film closely, when we're filming him live, we're literally like less than a foot from his face.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, at any one time, they were invisible.
Wow.
And so we traveled to New York City with him, we traveled to Sicily with him, we traveled to Italy with him, and at all times when we had the camera on, it wasn't like, I'm doing this now. It was like we were like a little troop, like we were doing the same things. It was a performance and we were there. It wasn't, we were voyeurs or anything like that. It was
you get the feeling a little bit. And so now especially that you guys are expressing this I don't know if the words would be very will convey it, but that you guys have that kind of an organic way to interact. There's a kind of a joyful comfort. It's not self conscious. It's just
whenever the subject of has come up about we really haven't done a film before. It was always the idea that was exactly correct. because I've always had this inner trust about the beginner's mind. Yes. I mean, this is an intuition.
Beautiful.
That I've always kind of have been trying to kind of always be in touch with.
Mm-hmm. And to be honest, that some of our apprehension, we were like, we don't really know what we're doing at times, we're experimenting, and he was always like, "That I see that as a strength rather than a weakness."
Yeah. And it was, and there was times where there was a lot of pain, I think, that accompanies that process, because there was times, especially early on, where I had a kind of inner dialogue with myself saying, well, I know that we're supposed to do this because I felt compelled to do it. I felt like it was obligatory. But why me and why now?
Hmm.
Because it seemed like I wasn't at a place where I was adequately prepared to be able to do something like that.
Huh. Mm-hmm. But it's funny. What something that came to me recently. Our discomfort does not give us a reason not to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you, it's not only a compulsion, the way you were expressing it, I sense it kind of a weird way. There was maybe something magnetic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was, I don't know that I still really understand, you know, inspiration or, you know, how the creative process works. But what I'm slowly learning is that when you feel compelled, you should act. And it's in the doing that these kind of things start to be produced and start to be crafted.
Yeah, I think it was sort of an organic sort of coming together. You know, we had been taking classes with Alex for years. I'd been following his work for years. Mm-hmm. Torben and I had been becoming friends and taking classes together, and it seemed like the natural thing to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when Torben said it out loud, I thought, yeah, it has to be done.
And it was about 2 years.
Yeah, we worked on it for a little over 2 years. We started November of 2007.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Filmed about 100 hours of footage. We went to all of Alex's performances for 2 years.
2 years.
Filmed all of the performances. And.
So you guys must have been on top of the editing. I mean, if you went to two years, and I'm guessing, I mean, the film was done in 2 years. That seems kind of phenomenal. So you guys were cutting and editing as you went to some degree, huh?
Yeah, there was a lot of overlap. We started filming, and then I would say maybe 6-7 months in, we started editing, and we were also filming. And
just you guys?
A lot of overlap.
Did you guys have an editor?
It was us. It was
you guys. Yeah.
Yeah, the bulk of it. We had some
received
people,
a lot of help from other people.
Feedback. People would watch our cuts, watch segments, and give us feedback. Alex, we would show Alex, you know, since you know what you're doing, you know, what's your take on it?
Right.
And so Alex gave a lot of help as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is something that's very collaborative, very, very engaging. I think that's definitely something that got my attention, just kind of engaging. And it was, you know, very enjoyable, playful, and it conveys something. There's any number of things it seems to convey. It just grabbed me in a number of ways. So I know it's hard when you're looking at your own creation. I mean, it's your baby, but I mean, you've been looking at it since 2007 in many respects. Mm-hmm. You too, Alex. What is it? I guess this is kind of where this question would go. You're seeing it new through other people's eyes now.
Yeah, absolutely.
How's that?
We were just having a sandwich before we came in, and we were talking about this very thing. Almost every single time I watch the film, if I'm there alone, I'm having my different new inner experience. And like specifically tonight and the other night at the premiere, I was seeing the movie through the crowd's eyes, seeing Alex for the first time, but it wasn't for the first time either. But it's just a very weird sensation. Each time I see the movie, new things reveal themselves to me.
Earlier on, Alex was talking about the creativity of the audience too, or how the audience builds on the creativity. In other words, that the you take a film, for example, and many people view the film as something that's this individualized compartment that exists autonomously from anything else.
Yeah.
And that you just take this static thing and then you show it to the audience, and then that's a whole different thing. And we were just talking about earlier how really what you experience with the audience is a continuation of the creating of that thing itself.
Yeah.
And so the film takes on a new life each time it meets a new audience.
Yeah.
And for me, it's been I told these guys earlier, I don't know, sometimes I don't ever want to watch it again. Sometimes I watch it and I'm delighted and I just like I love it, and then there's other times I watch it and I think to myself, man, I can't put myself through this ever again.
Or as Heraclitus says, you never step into the same screening twice.
Well, it's like I know many, many mothers who just love their children to death, but wouldn't want to give birth to them again.
Yeah,
wouldn't be volunteering for that.
There you go.
Yeah, birth pangs.
Yeah.
Well, yes. What's really marvelous about this whole thing—the arc of tonight's adventure—it began with a phone call to me at when did you call me? Like 5:30 or something?
We didn't have too much time.
No, and Vinny says, hey, you got to come see this movie.
Great.
So there's a particular audience that you guys are seeing in many respects, I imagine. There's a resonant audience. Vinny, you had what resonated for you? I mean, there's a number of things.
Wow.
I know they're going to resonate
for
you. What drew you to it, first of all? What drew you to this film? And why'd you go?
Just the description in the Metro and just the idea that there was this individual who was constructing a new world out of sound. And I found so many resonances because this has pretty much been my story. I didn't know I was a sonosopher. I just knew I was a sonic shaman. That's pretty much how I call myself. But I knew that I have a compulsion anytime I get into a space that looks like it could be resonant to find the sweet spot and to play around with the different harmonics. And I thrill doing it for hours and hours. And the other day my son said something to me pretty wise, because my wife and my son are both kind of fed up with the whole thing. I've heard enough Aramaic, Tibetan, Cherokee. Dad, you don't know any of those languages. Why do you sound like you're Chinese? One minute, you know, he'll walk in on me, you know, in a moment when I'm in a swoon. And that's what's coming out of me. And so the other day, my wife and my mother-in-law left the house. And as soon as the house is completely empty except for me, I start the experiments. I do a quick prayer, and then I just start opening up, because that's the time to, like, dip into that magical well. But I didn't know my son was in the house. He was in the bathroom. And I started up as soon as my mother-in-law and my wife went out the door. The door no sooner shut.
Yeah, they're not even out of the driveway.
And my kid comes out, and he goes, Dad, will you give it a break? They didn't even shut the door, and you got to fill the place up full of your voice. So that's what resonated with me, was just the simple fact that I have gone to the Yucatan and been into some Mayan temples and known that there were certain sounds that I made that were perpetuated, almost like it was just continuing to go on and on. And my wife happened to be in the temple at the same time, and she said that the hairs all over were standing up. So I knew I was affecting the electromagnetic field in some way, and that this temple was designed for that purpose, and that the ancients held so sacred those utterances that they had to build a shrine to magnify them. And
Amen. Holy cow.
And, I mean, wow.
We visited some monk cells in Sicily where Alex did some chanting, and it's a similar thing where each cell is constructed in a certain way that have its own tone that really resonates, and yes, distinctly different one to the next.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Well, and there was a number of sites that I saw you guys at, and that was one of the things I would have asked it, but I was having too much fun just hanging out. But I get to ask it now. Every place, kind of like you were saying, the people different group, different synergy. Every place.
Those localities, and there were some that didn't make it into the film even.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, there were specific localities that I mapped out that in one way or another have played a role in my work or in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, you know, from St. Francis up in Assisi, you know, who I think is one of the big sonosophers of all time, you know, when he was preaching the gospel to the birds, I mean, he was using sonosophy, you know, to cross-communicate across not only across gender, but across species, you know, speaking the same language.
Okay.
You know, and so we went down into, into Florence, where there was, you know, the cells of the monastery of Saint Marco, you know, with each one of them being almost tuned for a specific purpose, all sonically, you know, evolving from a sonic structure, and the same thing all the way down to every locality that we went to, and so those are the idea of it couldn't have been done in one place. You see, because place and space play a major role in the way I've evolved.
And so there's my
life and myself.
This progression of totally, flowering.
Totally.
And so the plant wants to go all over the place. And
or choose its localities on its own, see, you know, and kind of just, you know, and so that's where we hit those specific, even the Statue of Liberty. We went out to the Statue of Liberty.
I saw the footage, but you guys were actually there. It wasn't stock footage.
We went every place. Every place we went to was, like I said, designated.
Okay.
You know, that it had this connection, you know, in one way or another.
Yeah. Autobiographical and you know, crossing over into Alex's sound work. Hmm. All the places were also autobiographical.
I mean, for us, for my family, you know, the Statue of Liberty was the equivalent to Mecca.
Yeah.
We used to go there once a year. I'm an immigrant, you know.
Wow.
I'm an immigrant. I was not born in this country.
Yeah.
I came over when I was 8.
Yeah.
You know, and for the immigrants, my mother and father and myself, the Statue of Liberty was a place we used to spend an entire day there once a year. And just make a picnic of it. And there was always a sort of unspoken reverence, you know, for this incredible lady. You know, and this went on for years and years. And so, when we, you know, part of the film was, that was one of the major sites, one of the major localities. And imagine, you know, we go up against paranoia, you know, because of what had happened in 9/11. And it took us about 3 hours to get approvals for our cameras. And we couldn't film in certain localities inside the statue. I mean, it was, you know, but it was a place that we had to go.
Yeah. And Alex always kept telling us that, you know, these are pilgrimages. You know,
each one.
Yeah, we never will go. I never forget about being a tourist. Forget about being a visitor. This is not about visiting localities. Yeah. We're on pilgrimage. You know, these are very specific places, and the idea of pilgrims.
Well, this story also, in many respects, is about a lot of little adventures, like with the performances. You know, for the people and for you. But your whole life, the arc of your adventure of your life. And it seems to be a very, tell me if the word spiritual doesn't seem right. Maybe it's like your adventure in experience. But it seems to definitely, you're not at all, it doesn't seem like you're reluctant to, you know, express your concern and your desire for something spiritual that you find, you know, filling you up.
Well, I see it as like breathing. You know, it's not something like that you even think about, you know, and the idea of spirituality in the real sense of that word.
Yeah.
It literally means the spirit, the breathing.
Yeah.
It's a very natural kind of everyday, every moment kind of situation. And this is why it was so good, because I think that our spirit, it was one of the things that made it possible, you know, to have the trust in each other, you know, and even when things got a little bit, you know, too intense,
yeah,
you know, there was this overriding spirit about the whole thing, you know, and so, you know, it just accompanies you,
yeah,
you know, and sees you through
wherever your adventure takes
whatever you. It is that you're doing, yeah.
Well, you know, and you had a very interesting adventure, and in particular going to Utah. And it seems like that is a place where your life has thrived. You know, not everybody in Utah probably would get or recognize where you're coming from or enjoy it or, you know, go with it. But there certainly are some.
You know, ever since I left Sicily, Utah has been the only place that I would claim as my second home. As odd as that may sound.
Yeah.
Because New York was always, for the immigrants someplace that, yeah, we're here to work, but we got to get back home. That was the immigrant mentality. And you had immigrants who were in their 70s, who had been in there 40, 50 years, were saying, I'm going to go home. You know?
They aspired.
Exactly. But what I did was I went the other way. I went even deeper into the American continent and went home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in retrospect, there's nothing, you can't predict it.
Well, now, what's interesting about that is it must have seemed strange to some people how you come here. I mean, you came from Sicily, born in Sicily, lived your good portion of your childhood there. And then you have, you know, a flourishing life in New York. It seems that it must have been flourishing to some degree. And then you have, it seemed, if you said it the way I heard it, you had a vision.
Totally.
Something said,
oh, yeah,
this is the way you go, or suggest you go. What?
I mean, that was part of the joining the LDS church.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not a casual kind of, I mean, it was a conversion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and whatever is real about that conversion will never leave me.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and this is something outside of the organizational things, you understand, outside of the dogmas that attend every organized effort, spiritual effort, you know.
Right.
This is transcends all of that stuff.
It was something that kind of reached out and called right to you and your experience, drew you to.
You know, and continues to.
What was it about Orem?
It was, at that point it was where I found some work.
Okay. That's where you're going to work.
Yeah.
But look at those sacred mountains. I mean, that was...
Well, this is what I mean.
Yeah.
When I started discovering where I was,
yeah,
and especially going down south where the Anasazi Indians had been,
so
and having experiences there of that nature.
You went out. Now, we didn't see that in the film, but that is fascinating.
That's
I'm so glad we got a little bit of time. You want to go into that a little bit?
Well, one of the key things that made Utah what it is for me is, number one, the conversion,
mm-hmm.
you know, religious conversion. Number two, my mother dying.
Mm.
You know, my mother is the first of our family to die on this continent.
Mm.
And so her flesh mingling with this earth was a bonding for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the third thing, and not necessarily those three things in the order that I'm giving them, was the fact that, you know, on a particular day we went down to scout out a performance space.
Yeah.
Out in the Utah down southern desert.
Yeah.
You know, and I saw from a great distance what appeared to be an interesting formation. And I remember I hadn't changed my clothes for about 3-4 days, and I decided to take my clothes off and change my clothes.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I took off all my clothes, I never wanted to put anything back on again.
You're off.
You know what I mean? Seriously, the air,
okay,
like hit my body all at once. You know?
Okay.
And I said,
you're
and so
furnace?
I was looking at this formation, and I started walking naked towards it. I'm clambering up this mountain toward, you know, and then I discover that I'm in an Anasazi home.
Oh, you found yourself there.
Well, there was the little wall.
Okay.
I walk in and I see the kitchen plates in place, and I see the corn, and it was like everything was in place. Mm-hmm. And I felt like an interloper, like somebody was going to come home soon.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I stepped in it and I turned around and I looked out into the desert itself, I know that was my home. And so that's how I connected in all those places like that.
Yeah, there was something. There was something that was alive there.
Very much so.
You know, when you said that about just suddenly, you know, it's time to take off the clothes. I mean, after 3 or 4 days, definitely. But when you went on that little adventure, kind of just, you know, took off. It's what kind of spoke to me there is that your whole adventure, your whole life is your art. It's what you create.
Yeah, I don't really differentiate.
Well, you know what? I think that's the shocking thing that we're all somehow ham-handedly recognizing that as challenged as it is, as heartbreaking as it is, what we've got here, this life, this experience, it is our treasure, and it's our greatest gift, it's our greatest blessing, maybe our Absolutely. Greatest heartbreak, but it's what we got.
Yeah, and it's so very, very precious.
It comes across, you know, in everything that we're talking about here tonight. Let me just say real quick, you're listening to the Vibrational Voyage program on KKUP Cupertino, 91.5 FM. This interview looks like the recording is working, so I'll work on getting it archived. Anybody who wants to listen to this again, you'll be able to find it through the website. You go to ncrising.com, short for New Consciousness Rising, ncrising.com. Go to the Vibrational Voyage Radio page and look in the chronological listing. So it's a fun conversation, a really engaging experience tonight with seeing the film. The film's called The Cynosopher. And we've got the filmmakers here with us. We've got Torben Bernhardt and Travis Lowe, and the subject and the being who's with us tonight in the film and in the studio, Alex Caldero. It's kind of about his adventure and his life, but it's also about the adventure that you guys all have together, you know, and it's interesting. It's kind of what we've been getting at tonight. One of the things you said in the film, Alex, was that, and I almost sensed a, you know, I don't know, maybe maybe not so much a sadness alone, maybe some bit of a brokenheartedness. You expressed that you wanted to sing and pray with, you know, your community or with the folks that you had connected. I guess it happened for a while. There was some interaction and synergy that you had there for a while, some sort of spiritual thing, and then it changed. There was a time when that changed. Now your performances, your relationships with resident folks, students, your colleagues, it seems to be present in that.
Yeah, I have to always redefine what community is. You know, I can't stick to one definition of it. You know, that's one of the things I've been learning. You know, and redefining community is not that simple. Because we're not defining community just as people you just get along with.
Yeah.
You know, it's a total kind of tolerance, love that's without any qualifications. You know, in a true community, the person who's insane, you know, is not shunned or put away somewhere. You know, he walks the same street as everybody else. The person who is, you know, even the criminal has a space. Usually a good jail, you know? you see what I mean? It's
like, he's got his space. He's included.
but you see, there's a space and a place for everyone. That's the real community. And so, you know, I've had to redefine it several times, and I'm in the process right now, right? And a lot of it has got to do with doing this film.
Yeah.
You know, of redefining what that means to me again.
Yeah.
And it's always a rejuvenating and a growing experience going through that process of redefining how I interact with others.
Yeah. Well, and it seems that must be adapting and
totally.
Evolving. It's growing.
Yeah.
So this is undoubtedly, a growth moment for that sense of community and your activity. And
absolutely.
And so it's interesting because that's going to start to now have some legs. And, you know, it seems the community's big, big, big important thing. And if it's real, it's organic. It's alive.
Exactly.
And then, So then there's ways for community to connect different aspects of the living, you know, breathing humanity. Kind of. So that's a synergy. I don't think you guys tell me. Have we seen that before? I mean, this seems like something that has an expression that has a.
I mean, you know, it's something, it's a work in progress.
Yeah.
You know, individually, as a nation, you know, as a world, you know, it's a work in progress. You know, so I have to redefine it for myself, and I kind of redefine it for those around me. He redefines it for himself and redefines it for those around him and everybody here in this room. You know, and it's this kind of redefining, reworking the same thing. You know, and then from time to time, there's these beautiful alignments that cause these wonderful crystallizations to happen. You know, renaissances.
A remarkable type of synergy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so it's a work in progress.
Yeah. Well, and see, you have connections to so many places. I know. Currently, where you seem to be living is still in Utah. But, I mean, throughout your whole life, through this film, you guys traveled. You went to the places where you had those connections. Some of those connections and new ones are coming alive. What about the old ones? Do you see and kind of resonate again now, definitely, even stronger?
Definitely. I mean, they're part of the alignment, right?
Anything
that is real, anything that is vital, you never really leave behind.
So you're finding some people, even back to Sicily, you were mentioning to me, that you had that kind of connection with, that you had that kind of resonance even as a child.
That it continues.
It's interesting in the film, there's that performance where Alex is putting things in his mouth and doing the performance piece. When we showed up there, in a town called Ramacca, Alex started speaking with them in Sicilian, and most Sicilians speak Italian there, and an old man there said, "You know, you sound like my grandfather," because Alex grew up speaking Sicilian before they started predominantly speaking Italian. And so the Sicilian language itself really fossilized in Alex as a young child.
Wow.
And so there was like a revitalization of their shared language together. And that piece is particularly powerful because he speaks it in Sicilian, and it's about the tragedy of language dying out.
Right. And there was a particular, I know you guys might not be able to quote it in English, but it was a particular individual who was the last speaker of his language.
Yeah, the Ottawa language.
That strikes me even stronger now.
As a matter of fact, about a week and a half ago, there was another last speaker of the language that died, another Indian language.
Where was this person from?
My son just sent me the email. This is about last week.
Wow.
You know, these are languages are dying. You know, these are especially Native American languages.
Right.
They're endangered. Sicilian is an endangered language.
Okay.
You know, in Europe, in Zurich, I think, there is a society for endangered languages.
Wow.
You know, you have Catalan, you have Basque. In Europe alone, there's at least 15, 20 languages that are endangered. You know, we talk about endangered species, you know, of animals and things like that. But the same thing is true, and in many ways even more tragic, when a language dies.
Yeah.
You know.
It seems like it's kind of, you know, part of part of
our humanity. Of humanity. Is done. Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. So it's it.
Part of our identity.
Exactly.
Part of our larger.
Yeah.
You know. So that's
identity, because they're ancient mother tongues.
And that's been vital to Alex's work. I mean, he you know, co-founded an organization called Arba Sicula, which tries to preserve the Sicilian language and culture, and wrote a Sicilian grammar. That's a very, you know, primal thread in his work, I think.
Does that go back a long time? When did you work on that?
Well, I worked on it almost 20 years. I haven't touched it in 10.
Oh, I remember you saying there were many different works that you're kind of have in progress, but they're, you know, different stages of growing.
Would
imagine.
For sure.
God, you know, this is a total joy being able to talk with you guys tonight. We're going to be wrapping it up. Michael Berry is up next with his program, Midnight Melange. And he's going to do visionary music for us. So stay tuned. We got a little bit more of this program just until midnight. And, you know, before we go out, we've got to have you guys talk about the events that are still happening in San Jose for the movie first. And then specifics about the movie where people can get more information and contact information.
We have a screening. We have one more screening in San Jose. That's going to be on Thursday at Camera 12 at 2:15
p.m.
And if for more information, we have a website. It's www.thesonosopher.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can follow our progress on there.
That's pretty good.
And we're on Facebook and Twitter, and there's a blog and that stuff.
So. We do have a, you know, we are pretty much the only Sonosophers out there. So if you if you Google the film, you'll come across it.
Well, I think we definitely found some more people who are resonant with the movie and with
the
tonight. So I just can't thank you guys enough. So how do people reach you, Alex? Say that they're interested in talking with you more, learning about you, finding about your work, and maybe being able to come and see a performance sometime.
Yeah, the sonosopher.com or wordshaker@usa.net.
Okay, email, Wordshaker.
Yeah, that's another my nom de plumes.
And is it okay? I'll put up links to those things. Yeah. Again, it might take me a little bit of time to do it, but I'm the webmaster. I get to be the writer and the editor and the board operator, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And just keep checking up for news on sonosopher.com, and we're working on a specific site for Alex as well. So.
Very good, very good. Well, it's a sheer pleasure. And it feels like a...
Likewise.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Real big blessing. Vinny, thank you. I got to say.
Vinny.
Thanks.
Thank you, Vinny.
Many thanks to Vinny for calling and letting me know. And, you know, it's funny how you get attracted to the most wonderful things right at the right moment. It's always strange and wonderful. So thank you out there to everybody for listening. It's a pleasure to be with you doing the Vibrational Voyage.